Good morning and good coffee, everybody. Hey, it's time for some morning coffee with Larry, and I'm glad that you are here joining with me today as I take my first sip of the day. Good and hot. It's a bold blend with just a little bit of milk to tame it down so early in the morning. Let's see. It's about, 6:02 in the morning on the 13th of September, 2023. And hope you are waking up to having a great day. It is still dark outside. Gosh, it's like the summer isn't here anymore. We are quickly approaching the fall equinox and the official start of fall, of autumn. And I like the break of temperatures. This week it's supposed to be all in the 70s where I'm at, so that's good. We can do stuff outside. It's not supposed to rain. And there's still a lot to get done. And so we just had our roof finished. Had to get a new roof. But it is done. The dumpster is waiting pickup. So I'm going to grab a bunch of stuff that needs to be thrown away out of the machine shed. Get rid of a bunch of clutter. And put that in the dumpster. And that's one of the projects to do today. It's a full day, but it begins with hanging out with you guys. Well, today we are continuing on the different chapters of The Triumph of Marriage by Neil Clark Warren. I'm not reading it, but just sharing my thoughts on it. And this one, we are on secret number 4, which is titled Get Healthy. A triumphant marriage requires 2 emotionally healthy people. And that is so true. That is so true. Whenever I was doing, a lot of marriage counseling over past decades, if you wanted to see how much progress you could make with a couple, you did have to address how emotionally healthy each party was. We go through life and we get dents and dings. I mean, plain and simple. We live in a fallen, sinful world, and there's lots of bad things that can happen, and many times does happen to us. We're dealing with different things, and what is so important, and I can't state this enough, is how we interpret those different things. In each and every one of us, every single one of us, including myself, we are all vulnerable to interpreting things based not really on accuracy and truth, but based on what strong emotion we feel. And we think that must be truthful. For any situation you go through, if you have a really, really strong emotional feeling and it's kind of turning into a belief. Now, here's a quick operational definition. A feeling is an emotion. And emotions are things like happy, sad, mad, glad, disappointed, disgusted. Those are emotions. Those are feelings. When you say, well, I feel like you don't love me anymore, that's not a feeling. That's not happy, sad, mad, glad. That's a statement. That's a belief. We just put the term feel because, frankly, if somebody says, well, that's not true, the usual comeback that people say is, well, it feels that way to me. Well, how can you argue against an emotion? But the truth is not found in the statement, possibly. Maybe the person does care, but there's a strong emotion associated with that belief, and that belief gets tagged, gets stuck to a situation. And we go through life doing that in a good way, where we are tagging an accurate belief to a situation, and we also do it in a bad way where we attach wrong, inaccurate, false beliefs to a person or a situation or a circumstance. And that really is key to today's secret. A triumphant marriage requires two emotionally healthy people. Think of it this way. You know the old saying, you know, a chain is only as strong as its weakest link? Well, that's the way it is with any relationship or even a collaborative process. If you were in school, did you ever have to do a group project? Yeah, pretty well everybody at some point in time had to do a group project. Teachers seem to like group projects. The problem is everybody hates doing group projects. Why? Because there's always that one guy or that one gal who won't, you know, haul their share. They won't carry their load of water. They don't do their part. And so we get frustrated. We get aggravated because they're not contributing, you know, as the others in the group are. Well, when you talk about marriage, if there is some sort of emotional baggage, some unhealthy aspect to, you know, their personality or to their way of coping and dealing with things, how they view themselves, how they view other people, how they view the world around them, if it is an inaccurate, unhealthy one, then that's going to cause a problem in the group project of marriage. And thing is, we all bring baggage to marriage. The longer we live, if we, you know, we can wind up bringing more to it. And again, I can't reiterate enough how important it is on the accuracy of our beliefs. So there's one thing that he has in the book that I think bears some talking about this morning. Again, I'm not reading the book. I'm just giving my thoughts on some of the things. And Neil has in here a little section called Five Emotional Concerns That Can Cripple a Marriage. And he starts off by saying, I have been asked countless times to outline emotional healthy concerns I believe are most responsible for breakdown in marriages. And let me specify five of them. So the first one he has is emotional emptiness. And one of the little things that he has down here is emotional emptiness is, in my opinion, largely the result of not being intimately acquainted with your inner self. A simple way of putting that is, if you're not good friends with yourself, you're going to have this emotional emptiness. We need to be friends and happy with ourselves. You know, it's kind of like there's a difference between alone and lonely. Alone is simply when you're by yourself. There's not another person there other than yourself. Lonely, you can be in a crowd of people, but if you don't like yourself, if you're not comfortable with yourself, if you're insecure with yourself, you can be in a crowd of people and feel alone. You can be with anybody and feel alone. That's the importance of being, you know, in a good relationship with you and who you are. And if you're not, that's a good reason to get some help, to get some counseling. Number two is low self-esteem. In low self-esteem, basically what it is your esteem is how you view something. So self-esteem is how you view yourself. What do you believe about yourself? Do you believe you're a good person? Do you believe you're competent? Do you have a positive outlook? You know, back in the 80s, there was this public service announcement that came on TV. And it just showed these it was in black and white even, but it showed these sad children's faces. And in the background, you heard a mean sounding voice that was supposed to be like a parent or somebody close to them. And they were just saying, you know, you're worthless. You're terrible. You can't do anything right. And the last one with the saddest face, the person said, I wish you were never born. And then comes on the announcer who says, you know, words can hurt more than a fist or something like that, you know, talking about emotional child abuse. Well, if you have those kinds of beliefs about yourself, is that going to impact your relationships? You bet. And it's going to impact the more intimate relationships more than others. If it's, you know, you may feel fine around strangers, but with people whom you should have a closer emotional intimacy with, it's going to impact that in a bad way. So again, if you struggle with low self-esteem, especially if it's tied to these inaccurate or very negative beliefs about yourself, that's a reason to get in and work with somebody, work with a professional who can help you with that. Number three, fear of emotions. And, you know, just a little bit of what he says there is any person who is the victim of inadequate structured self-concept may well fear his or her own feelings or emotions. We can have strong sense of structure in our lives and in how we look at things, or we can have a very unstructured, unorganized way of looking at things. Just for example, was recently at a volleyball game for a granddaughter, and by the way, her team won. Yay for her. But they had a handout sheet. On one side was her team in school, and the other side was the opposing team. And I've done graphic design, and I love making forms, that kind of stuff. That's just a quirky habit I've had for 30 years. And so when I was looking at her team's side, it was very easy to follow, because they had boxes, and so you could see, here's the members of the freshman team, here's the junior varsity, here's the varsity, and then it had one section here that was, here's school-related things, and it had, you know, who the superintendent and the principal and, you know, blah, 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 you know, coaches and such. And it was like, oh, very easy to follow. On the other side, they had mostly the same information for their teams, but it wasn't as easy to follow because the structure was not as, I guess, connecting. I couldn't connect with the structure that well, and I had trouble kind of, you know, I couldn't as quickly find the different things that I was interested in finding. Well, in our mind and with emotions, we can have things kind of laid out in an organized way, or we can have more struggles with it. And as a result, if we start feeling strong emotions, we may have fear that we're going to react poorly to it. You know, it's kind of like the make a mountain out of a molehill. We may know logically this is just a small thing, but our emotions may come out very strong and very inaccurately. And so if we have a fear of how we react emotionally, or a fear of feeling emotions because when something happens, we have a strong negative response, that's something that needs to be worked on. Again, on these different things, do you see how these could impact a relationship? Especially one if you're wanting to have a good, healthy, intimate, you know, emotionally intimate relationship. Number four, character disorders. And these are ones where I guess you could say they're really patterns, bad patterns that a person can develop. You know, I've done a lot of work with Boy Scouts, and I've talked a lot about Boy Scouts over this podcast. And One of the campaigns several years ago that the Boy Scouts did was one called Character Counts. And it's the idea that the foundation of Boy Scouts is to develop strong character in the boys and young men that are in their program. And so when you look at character disorders, these are things where the good kind of character traits are absent, and maybe bad ones are specifically there. One of the things that he says here is, it is profoundly difficult to build a stable relationship with a person whose character is defective. If he or she lies, cheats, cuts corners in every way, shows disregard for the feelings of others, you know, that those are the things that are pretty bad character traits in a marriage. You know, why do people steal? Why do people cheat? Why do people lie? Well, there can be different reasons. You can't just make a single assumption. But those are serious things, because when those are in a relationship, the other person's probably going to start building walls. They're going to put up their shields, to use a Star Trek term. They're going to try to block, and protect themselves. You know, I remember one couple. They were a young couple. They had not been married but maybe a year. And shortly after getting married, it became clear to the wife that the husband was a compulsive liar. And I'm not saying that is a flippant statement. He admitted that it didn't matter the situation. He found it easier to lie than to tell the truth. And it was about stuff that there was nothing wrong. He wasn't doing anything wrong. There wasn't anything to cover up. But there was something serious going on with how he viewed himself and how he viewed the world, and not developing a character trait of truthfulness. And, you know, they came in for a few sessions. It's been so long ago, I don't remember how the outcome was, but I do know one thing, and that is that kind of trait will lead to the end of a relationship. Either it ends in divorce, or it ends in them having basically just like a roommate situation, and not something where the marriage is how a marriage should be. So if someone has character disorders, that has to be addressed. And then finally, number five of this is anger management. How does your spouse handle situations where they feel angry? Do they bottle it up like a pressure cooker, and you get your hand over the steam vent and you get scalded? Is it one where it's like holding a firecracker in your hand and it goes off and it quickly does damage? Doesn't kill you, but it kind of maims you. You know, it's not to say that we should never feel angry, but if every time we feel angry, somebody else gets hurt or injured or has to back up and withdraw, that's not good. You know, it's kind of like, I need to plant a rose bush in the backyard. I know I could use a shovel, but boy, I could move a whole lot more dirt if I get a bulldozer. That never happens. You don't plant a rose bush with a bulldozer. But think about people you know in your life. Let's just broaden it up to anybody that you know. Are there some people where you cringe being around them because they explode in anger so easily? Yeah. There's been a lot of people I've known over the course of my life where, you know, not just in counseling, but just in friendship stuff. And it's like, it's not good hanging around. You don't know what they're going to do, and it may happen in any situation. So if that's you or your spouse, get some help with that. Doesn't mean that you shouldn't feel anger in certain situations, but it has to be under control. Okay? All right. So again, this secret that we have here is, let me pull back. Nope, I went too far back. What? There we go. Get healthy. A triumphant marriage requires two emotionally healthy people. All right, that's it for today. We will catch you next time with the next secret of the triumphant marriage. Have a great one. Take care. God bless.